boys. Looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
My name is Eric, and I am here with part-time apex predator Michael Kester.
Just a part-time apex predator.
Yeah, I didn't want to put you up to too much here. On the podcast double feature.
I got a lot going on, man. I can't be an apex predator 40 hours a week. You kidding me?
What are we doing on the show?
Today we're going to cover a pair of films, you know, like we do. Welcome to double feature. Sure, we pair films. Films like, but not limited to, Crawl and Train to Busan.
At long last, Train to Busan.
At long last, but not quite.
At long
quite.
Last, Crawl, a movie that's been out 6 months. You know, it's important.
But you'll have to wait. You have to wait 24 minutes. You have to wade through the waters of Crawl to get to Train to Busan. But you're so close. You've gotten so close.
Yeah, once you get on that train, I'm sure it'll just take you right there. There'll be no problems.
It's easy.
It no definitely hiccups. Won't, for some reason, take 2 hours and multiple stops after your promise that Busan is that there's spoilers in this show. Just throwing out spoilers for no reason. And probably, man, Train to Busan, that's a movie I want to talk about the ending to. So
great. Well, that'll be at spoilers. The end of today's show. So sorry.
I know, it happens.
Anybody who has not listened to Double Feature before, hi, where the fuck have you been? We pair two movies together, utterly disinterested in your opinion on them as far as whether or not they are good or bad.
It's okay. I have no opinions on movies. Yeah. So it's really fine.
Largely disinterested in whether you give it a thumbs up or a star up or whatever the fuck people do. And instead, we're just going to talk about what these movies are doing, why they're important, and how they apply to each other. We're going to talk about some greater themes. I'm going to keep my mouth shut about American presidential candidates and their ilk to the best of my ability. And we will dive into the specifics of what these films are talking about thematically, and less whether or not Crawl is a good movie, because it is, and fuck you.
I told you I had no opinions. What are you looking at me like that for?
Well, I'm sorry. Fuck you anyway.
I have an exciting thing I haven't had a chance to tell you about yet, so I'm okay. Just going to like break this to you.
All right, here we go.
And as a person who doesn't actually listen to podcasts, you won't care at all about this, but...
Perfect.
So for a long time, we've known this problem is coming, where we have many, many years of the show. We don't actually have just this 1 year, even though it may appear that the entire thing started just a mere, what, 5 episodes ago or something?
Yeah, 11 or 25 or something.
If that's as long as you have been playing along with Bandersnatch and Into the Spider-Verse, great. Super good. Glad to have you. And if you haven't, that's a good one to go back and start at. But we've actually, little known fact, we've actually been doing this kind of a long time. This isn't our first try. We've died and restarted many, many, many times on Double Feature. And those episodes have been all over the place. They're on iTunes for the first year, and then they're on a Patreon. You log into a website, and none of them are in a podcast feed. Well, some of them were in a podcast feed, then they don't fit in the fucking podcast feed. So this was kind of a disaster. And, you know, thanks to good old coronavirus, which is hopefully making its first and last appearance right now and not, say, on the Train to Busan chunk of the show, I've had some time to go in and fucking fix this, finally. So it's done.
You deleted it. That's what you
I
did.
Deleted all the shows forever. You can't hear any of them anymore. They're all gone permanently. And I actually went through and scrubbed them off of the internet. So there's no allusion to them. Nobody can find them.
Before you say that that's a joke, I will tell you that part of
I'm
me-
I'm sorry,
like,
what do I have to say?
Part of me likes that because I really just want to talk about Cabin Fever again now, because I feel like the amount of conversation that we had then versus like Cabin Fever now. I just have so much more to say because like Cabin Fever now exists in 2020 when it didn't when we covered it.
Yeah, well, I also think that the long-running joke is we can do that once they stop making movies, and then they literally fucking stopped making movies.
That's true, you're right. Year 14 is when we revisit our best old pairs that need revisiting.
We realize that there is, in fact, no more films. I mean, we're covering Crawl on the show, so clearly we have made it all the way to 2019.
You think that's bad? Wait till next week.
I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. All right. So the thing that I was going to say is I figured out a way where members can subscribe to a special version of the feed. It's created specifically for them. So it took a little bit of code. I say I figured out a way. Basically, it builds a feed for you based on your membership. So when you log into the site, if you're a Patreon subscriber, you'll see a new thing at the top. And you just copy and paste that into wherever you listen to podcasts. And it creates a different feed for you. Fuck this feed. This is the public feed. You don't want the public feed. You subscribe to the Patreon feed, and it not only gives you the public episodes, but it also gives you all of the old episodes. So they wouldn't fit in sort of the, I don't need to go into all the code nonsense. It took a long time. It was very hard. So pat me on the back for it is my point.
Thank you for doing a really good job. Now everybody can go back and listen to my refrigerator.
On
the singing detective, yeah, so, and the other movie.
So thank you for putting up with years and years of our content being scattered all over the fucking place. It feels like such a personal relief to me to have this done, because this is really how it should have been since we created this whole members nonsense. But when you program all this stuff like on your own with no infrastructure or team, then once you stop typing, it stops getting developed. Nobody works on it anymore. So that's sort of like the downside of all of these custom rolled solutions. Anyways, patreon.com/doublefeature. You can go in there now. You get a login, and that's it.
Worst commercial ever.
Unlocks all the
worst ad for Patreon. It
unlocks all the content and some other weird stuff. It also gives us the ability
coming to our TED Talk
to do some weird things in the future. Since people have this special feed, We could, in theory, do something like release an episode early to them. Just putting that idea out there. I'm just saying, if we ever recorded an episode more than 5 minutes before it's supposed to go up.
But let's also keep in mind that the current date and time is
right
the time you're listening to it.
You're actually listening to this before we say it. That's how late we record
our equipment these. Our equipment is so broken that we're actually unable to record episodes, and we just repeat ourselves live for a full week.
Oh my God. We rely on you to email us to tell us what we said so we can record. That's how fucking late these episodes are. All right. patreon.com/doublefeature. Get the episodes on time or earlier or late. One of those options. And old episodes. Okay. So we might as well just start with this right in Crawl, but I want to expose the secondary theme of the show here.
Okay.
Now, you had said, all right, I got an idea. It's sort of epic disaster bottle movies. And I think that one, that's kind of funny because these are movies that sort of say they're bottle movies and then do the extra work anyways. They're sort of like bottle movies. Now let's walk outside the bottle, see what's going on out there. Okay, let's go back in the bottle.
Right.
So that's funny. And Crawl does that. I want to look at how Crawl does that because I think that's kind of fun. But they also have this secondary theme of kind of interesting configurations of family. You know, they aren't, if I were to say that they're epic disaster family movies or whatever, I imagine, you know, Brad Pitt snuggling his two kids, one wife and half a dog. What's the American configuration for
that
families?
Exactly.
I'm
correct.
Sorry,
yeah.
I totally fucked it up.
But you get to pick the axis that the dog half is on.
Right. Oh, bring in that weird human centipede energy to every show. I really, really appreciate that. But yeah, so our family setup and Crawl is, you know, we come at this from actually both movies today. We come at the from the perspective of a daughter, but a very different age in this movie than the next. And so we're concerned mostly with this father-daughter dynamic that's kind of fallen out here. So there's a bit of a kind of a homecoming to it. It's not what I would have thought about and really shouldn't think about as the family unit disaster movie, which is like a Americana family is together and has to stick together through the...
Right.
It sort of feels when you watch that in, this in Crawl, I feel like it should have been this way the whole time. It's like a family who was going through terrible hardships and was only kind of half of a family to begin with is tested or rekindles that through what they're going through.
Right. It's almost like the disaster is a metaphor for the work they have to do to bring them back together.
Come on. Give Crawl a little more of a curtain to hide behind. You Listen, can't just reveal the whole magic show like
both
that.
Both of these movies, Crawl is no exception, exist in a very specific type of universe, and it's the universe that we live in. But I refer to it as a post-Snakes on a Plane universe.
Both of these movies have a little of that going
well,
on.
Well, that's the thing that I... And Snakes on a Plane is a movie that I am vehemently convinced you will never let me get on this show. But there is something to be said about it, which is that it was the first bullshit bottle movie to go, I don't know, horrible thing in a tight space and you're stuck there. And as soon as you hear the title, you go, okay, and you start playing off a list of thought experiments of what goes on when you have crocodiles in your basement or zombies on a train. You get...
Alligators, Michael, please.
Whatever.
We looked this
Sorry,
up for a reason.
I thought I was going to see him after a while, but I saw them later.
Ugh.
So
I hate it.
So you have this thing that happened where these sort of incredibly high concept bottle movies put a bad thing in a small spot. That there's your movie, right? That's what the fucking slimy producer says. There's your movie.
Yeah.
Crawl exists in that universe. Crawl exists in a universe where it may have just...
Are you saying that was your Sam Raimi impression? Is that what that was? I'm not sure that's really...
It exists in a universe. It may as well be called Gators in the Basement. And I think by having that as sort of... In a post-Snakes on a Plane universe, you have seen the success of a one-trick pony. And I think Crawl, and to a lesser extent, Train to Busan, I think Crawl could come out the gate and be like, look at these rednecks in Florida. Oh no, there's gators in the basement. One of them got their nuts bit off.
Yeah.
There's your movie. Like,
yeah.
But it doesn't do that. It opens with this whole like, hey, look, this character is not one dimensional and there's a relationship here and there happens to be alligators. It's almost like oh my God, I'm sorry. I'm in advance.
Oh my God.
It's almost like the bottle isn't the house. The bottle is their relationship.
It's not almost like that. It's super like that. Yeah, but I mean, I think you've hit on a couple other elements that piecing together what this movie is are really important. I don't think Crawl is the same movie in anywhere USA. I think the fact that it's in Florida and this distinct kind of like... It might as well be sponsored by Florida. This is what Florida would like other people to believe it is.
May I take an aside quickly?
Please.
I saw this at a theater. They were doing a tipsy brunch screening of this movie.
Crawl for brunch.
Yeah, tipsy brunch screening. And one of the drinking games was anytime you're reminded that this takes place in Florida, take a drink.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, we did... You remember when we did that movie, Sun Don't Shine?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's kind of another interesting thing, thinking about these old shows today. It's like, which movies come back up in your mind all the time?
Mm-hmm.
I think this was the same year... Yeah, because this was last year. This was the year of Parasite, right?
Right.
Parasite was another movie. Like, I see it. I know that it's good. But I didn't think I'm going to obsessively just be going about my life and go, wow, remember this in Parasite just for no reason? But Sun Don't Shine is kind of like that. You know, when I think about how people treat Florida, there's sort of two cool things you could do with it. because Florida has the reputation it does in the United States, you know, you could lean into that the way that movie did and show a weird thing in Florida movie. Or you could take Crawl's sort of like alien multiverse version of Florida that's like, no, there's totally normal people going through normal, relatable stuff in Florida. Here, I'll show you. And then just throws a hurricane into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, the people in Florida aren't weird. It's the weather. It's clearly, obviously just the weather. It's kind of a challenge, actually, thinking about that, to go, well, we're going to pin all of this stuff on the family drama. And to some, like, I think the audience gives you a little room on something like that. But there is some amount where you do have to do the work. And if you don't do the work, then it's going to fall apart. And so I think there's, you know, there's a version of this movie where you don't believe anything about the father-daughter relationship and it just falls flat completely for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you're dealing with a lot of the tension and you have to make some of the kind of like instinctive but logical leaps, if you don't have a foundation set down, then all of a sudden when a character does some crazy thing that happens in kind of an action or a horror movie, you really get stuck on questioning why that happened instead of leaving that stuff behind. It's kind of like a good faith that the movie earns by sort of like putting that work in.
Mm-hmm.
We should also talk about the director a little bit.
Yeah, cool. Good. I'm glad.
Important.
I was worried that that wasn't going to happen.
I mean, come on.
This film's directed by Alex Aja or Alexandra Aja. He is one of the... This thing that never really existed that you and I just swear was a real thing, which is the Splat Pack.
Yeah.
I was just talking about the Splat Pack 2 days ago because I've started watching Wolf Creek on Shudder.
Oh, yeah.
Before
we get too deep into this, is it also time on our show to just give up and start calling him Aja? Is it that time yet? Or
is that, should we call him that?
I don't know. This is that seems what other people call him? This seems to
Listen,
be the last
soft
couple
G's
years.
Are, soft G's are never safe for us.
Isn't it a J as well?
I don't care. Soft J. Aja.
Really an authority here on the...
Whatever.
Well, you know, there's sort of a spectrum because it's French, right? So you can like...
Yeah.
You can really... You have to pronounce the whole thing from the back of your right. throat if you're... Yeah. I'm not about to do it, but you could if you want.
Alexandra Homage.
This whole thing is moot because by the time we really dedicate any effort to pronouncing it correctly, you'll realize that that's not his real name anyways.
Sure.
So,
yeah. But yeah, so he was part of this group of directors back in the early, you know, the first decade of the 2000s. That was called the Splat Pack by someone at some point. Other directors include Eli Roth, who did the Hostel films, or probably most famous for House of the Clock and Its Walls. The filmmaker Rob Zombie, Greg McLean, who did Wolf Creek and, you know, Rogue and, you know, a couple other things. Neil Marshall, most famous for the second to last episode in the seasons of Game of Thrones you liked.
Uh-huh. really hitting all the staples
the
there.
Deep cuts here. And you know, I think there were a lot of other directors that you and I sort of attributed to that movement to. I think Adam Green, I think Joe Lynch, but definitely Aja was in that group, really because at the time he had just come off High Tension.
Oh yeah, that's where I remember a lot of that start. Well, that's double, right? Because it feels like those hard R movies in the United States, but it's also a French film.
Right.
So it started our French extreme
right.
sort of obsession there.
Yeah. Well, he went to a really weird place in American cinema. I feel like he's a director that a lot of people may have seen, known about his movies, but he did what? So we're talking about the guy who directed Crawl here. So he directed... Just see if you can think of any that I'm missing.
I'm ready.
We got High Tension. We got The Hills Have Eyes.
Great.
Piranha 3D.
Mm-hmm.
Horns.
He did direct Horns. Wow, I totally forgot about that.
And then a movie that I'm forgetting, and then Crawl.
It was before Horns, he did Mirror.
That's what Remember it was, Mirror. I wanted to call it Reflection, but it's Mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, fine.
So yeah, he did. He actually did a number of remakes and stuff, and then returned to originals with horns, of all things.
All known for being bloody. All known for being brutal.
Sure. I mean, regardless of sort of the ends of the genre that he is on, they are always very dark, very brutal. Horns probably the least of which, but still not devoid of that.
Well, and I think you definitely see that stuff in Crawl. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Crawl to me, you know, when I saw Crawl announced and you see Raimi and I'm just not going to say his last name now, Raimi and this director are together on a movie. For me, that felt a lot like, oh my God, I'm so excited to see him do another movie. Similarly, but with different results than Alita Battle Angel, where, so this movie, you know, it got announced. I was really excited about it. It came out in the theater and I totally missed it because, you know, it came out when other movies were coming out and you just can't see everything all the time. I want to go back to that time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I saw it for brunch and it was great. And I think I knew deep down that Crawl was going to be a movie that, you know, it's cheap and it's fluffy in its own way, but like it doesn't not make you feel something. The end of the movie feels victorious. You root for, you know, it's all the shit that a good movie is supposed to do, right? I mean, this movie isn't going to make some asshole's top 10 list, but like, that's not important to me.
I don't know. I think it made many an asshole's top 10 list.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think there were.
I mean, to me, I'm just watching this movie and there's just so much. I think to go back to what I was saying about a post Snakes on a Plane universe, this movie goes through the trouble of making me believe that all of the facets of this problem are presented in a way that I don't think is stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I go, okay, so there's two alligators. Here's a stupid solution. They're like, there's actually more because look, they're coming in through this vent.
Well, that's what I meant about them going outside.
Right.
You know, the outside, when they go outside, it's not much better than inside. They're still... kind of worse because you get outside and you realize you've been trying to escape a prison and it's in the middle of the ocean or what the fuck ever. You know,
by the time they get outside, the floor is lava. So
yes,
and outside is all the floor.
Yeah, and even the moments where it kind of stops and goes outside to a gas station or whatever, I do think it releases the tension a bit. But when I really, you know, when I systematically go through those scenes, there's like the people robbing the 7-Eleven or whatever, they get eaten. You know, like it's always bad outside. You step outside the house to see that the storm is getting worse. You know, it is always worse outside the house. But I think there's a lot of cues that help line up with that aren't just foundation or relationship. Even the kind of design of the map, if you will, is done in a way that feels like it's giving you the pieces. You know, the setup, the sort of first act of the movie isn't just to set up the dynamic of the characters or make you feel something or give you flashbacks. It's also going like, here's a door that you're locking. That's going to come back. Here's a pipe you're going under. And it's our character also surveying, going, okay, this pipe hangs overhead. All right. Noting that. And then later, when we start seeing alligators, it's like, it is video game design. It really is. It's like, oh, this is one with three pipes. No one can go. Two pipes means you can go under, but they can't. You know, one pipe means they can bust through the pipe, but it'll slow them down. And that's sort of,
right.
You know, it uses that same training of a player's mind in game design that it does for the audience. And I think those are always the... I do think they've actually kind of gotten better film to film, but those are the sort of thriller traps or horror traps that, now I've done it, Aja, that Aja's really good at. And then also the moments of gore, you know, it's all the little choices around this kind of stuff. Like when we first see the alligators, you know, it seems like the smart and safe bet is to milk it for tension and then reveal the thing of the movie. And instead, just fucking drops it right in your lap when you're not expecting it. You know at any moment there's a fucking alligator on the poster. Like, you know what's going to happen. But the actual moment where we see for the first time, we have to confront it for the first time, it just sort of fucking appears. And when you think about it, like, yeah, you could do the more Spielberg tension build kind of moment, but it really, it sets up the rest of your movie better if you drop it in your character's lap, because then you know that you don't know what to expect. It's the kind of movie where a thing is going to try and swallow your arm and you're going to shoot it in the stomach and you don't know if she's going to come back with half an arm or not. All right, well, before we get bogged down and does the dog die or not or some such nonsense, we should we should just move right over to Train to Busan.
So this is a film, Train to Busan, shit, we fucked up. Crawl, hey, Crawl is a movie, there's like alligators in your basement, cool. So Train to Busan.
I think we covered the relationship, that's really the extra work there.
Train to Busan is another movie that takes place in a post Snakes on a Plane universe. It's a movie about a single father and his part-time daughter taking a train to Busan. That's what we're doing. Enter zombies. There you go. That's your plot.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It really could be zombies on a train if it weren't, you know, the part you're missing out on when you describe it that way is it doesn't feel like a genre movie in that respect.
Right.
You know, it does that great thing foreign horror movies get attributed to so often, which is that it takes it seriously. Mm-hmm. That it's kind of a drama of a, you know, a bunch of zombies on a train movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think the strengths of Train to Busan is, like you said, it takes it seriously. It tries to do something other than be a zombie thriller on a train. I also think that it does a really good job handling So when it comes to zombie movies, there's rules, right? We've talked about this all the time. We talk mm-hmm. about it a lot with different horror genres or what the fuck ever staples. And, you know, it's you kind of have your checklist of this or that when it comes to a zombie movie. And it's like, okay, fast zombies or slow zombies? Okay, these are fast zombies. And are they, what is it, a virus? Are they undead? And then, you know, you get into the minutiae of like, I think of that there's that TV series where if they like rubbed their bodies in like dead people's innards, the zombies wouldn't smell them as living.
Classic.
But like that's the kind of thing. Like in that universe, sure, but if you rubbed yourself in innards in Dawn of the Dead, you'd be fucking eaten in the mall. That's just
yeah.
So this movie, you know, sort of employs these device mechanics about the blindness, which is alluded to by the way the zombies look.
Well, and the wet newspaper, which is the best.
Right.
Like it's almost a joke.
Yeah.
You sort of wet the newspaper and stick it up so you don't have to look at the zombies. Now the problem's taken care of. Easy. Easy fix.
Well, if they can't see you.
Right.
Then, yeah, then there's no snakes on the plane.
And I'm sure there's some metaphorical implication of this. I mean, how dare you do a genre movie on a train if it doesn't have deep societal implications? So,
I mean, this movie definitely is rife with its, you know, I mean, you talk about the capitalistic issues and the class struggles with, I mean, listen, this movie, this, you know, fucking whatever. So you find out that your main character, fucking single dad, that his company is the reason for the experiment that turned people into zombies. And now you have zombies and it's like this guy's fault, I guess, is like a way to look at it.
Yeah. It's like he goes to the office and then there's a Dogecoin and they trade and then there's zombies. So,
right.
Yeah.
Pretty much that.
Follow you completely.
It's definitely the film attributes, greed to the rationale for why these zombies have come out. And then you also have literally the worst human being in cinema history who also shows you that being a greedy person makes you.
I liked the little girl. I don't know why you. Kidding. Totally kidding. I actually think the movie has a pretty nuanced take on greed, or at least it gives airtime to multiple sort of.
Sure.
Theories around it, because it kind of asks this question about, I mean, maybe, I don't know that I'd necessarily say that about greed, but maybe about altruism.
Yeah, you know, you go. That's probably more narrow.
When you're thrown into a situation like this, And I think also, you know, just the time we're in and the world makes me think more about this than the movie might even emphasize. But when you're put in a survival situation, how much do you worry about your own life versus the community?
Right.
And how much do you put yourself at risk for the people around you? And we see a couple people on extreme ends of that spectrum, but we also see various people meet different ends, actually kind of regardless of their philosophy.
Sure.
I mean, I think the nihilistic take of this movie is kind of like death comes for us all. It doesn't matter if you're fucking greedy or not. So, you know, do whatever. But, you know, we see that idea of like you go through your life helping other people and fucking for what? We see the people who reach out to help die. But then, of course, we also see the villains of the film and the people who are insanely selfish, the people that the audience look at and go, fuck that guy. I want that guy to get eaten. When does he get eaten? They don't survive either. I think if we were to really try to, I mean, this takes the wind out of the sails of the movie a little bit. But my read on the film is that it is pretty, nobody makes it out, man.
Like, that's, I mean, I think that's what I'm getting at. But here's the thing. I think what you need to understand is that you're looking at it from the end of the movie being the rest of the road to Busan.
Mm-hmm.
When in reality, if you look at the microcosm of the film as the entire timeline you have with these characters, being a certain way gets you further.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You see, I would argue one of the most selfless people in the film, who's the husband with the pregnant wife. He goes out like a hero, probably like a solid 5 to 6 hours before the villain goes out, and he takes the dad with him.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, if your goal is to survive to the 100% completion of the film, you have to be one of two ways. And both of those ways are to have people looking out for you, which goes back to your argument about altruism, which is that those people would not have survived without altruistic people supporting them.
Yeah. Well, I also think as far as a lot of the set pieces of the movie go, people are just having a better time when they're working together. You know, the dangerous moments are when somebody decides to do something for themselves. And the moments that when you were describing some of the logic and the canon and I suppose the rules of the universe, I was thinking about the scene where the three of them decide to tape up their wrists and start punching zombies in the teeth, which is maybe dubious, a dubious method.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems so fun, the three of them working together and sort of having these almost kind of different disciplines. You know, somebody to kind of play the tank, and then the guy who they have thrown under the
You're playing World of Warcraft with these guys now.
It's a little bit of that. Yeah, I wasn't gonna get terribly specific, but now it is time for an ad break. Experience the World of Warcraft. You thought people stopped playing it years ago, but due to the economy, it's back. World of Warcraft. Okay. But that's what I mean. Like, that is it's got a fucking suit up montage. It's got some clever dialogue that leads into it. And then you want to see how it plays out. So the movie has a perspective, even when it tries to maybe be a little to appear more even handed than it is. I think the fact that the movie goes, well, let's have fun working together, shows how it ultimately feels about that. But it really doesn't stop it from, you know, it's not pulling any punches on that ending. You get to the ending and it fucking sucks. It's just brutal. It's like, I love two things about this movie. One, I love that it takes itself seriously, always near and dear to my heart. You know, that we can take a movie that is such a genre premise and we can tell character stories and do drama with it and talk about philosophies on how to live life, and really just that it's not fucking goofy, you know, that it's not all gags. I love that. But man, to stick that ending, which is like everything from the out of left field flaming train on, just kind of gets worse and worse and worse. I mean, I guess the whole movie kind of gets worse and worse and worse for people. But to have this guy who's gone through, you know, a bit of redemption, who we've heard like, oh, you deal with money, you're terrible. But we've seen through his actions, like at the very least, he's trying to defend his daughter. And, you know, at most, he's really the lead character in trying to keep everybody safe. He's the hero of the film.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him to go down in the end for fucking nothing just sucks, you know, and to give him one more moment to just like feel for him, for poof, off the train, goodbye. And then the way it plays with that tunnel at the very end.
Yeah.
It's just one of my favorite little kind of inventions of the movie. Like they walk into that tunnel and it's a perfect spot for an end of the film. They're walking into darkness and it creates a natural enigma around what happens. There's a question, you know, you watch that scene and the conclusion in the audience's mind, every choice around how you're doing that scene is to make the audience go, and then what happens? But instead of giving you credits and taking kind of the easy ending that you've already landed, it waits until everybody's formulated the question and then what happens. And the very next edit is the muzzle of a rifle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just like, ah, oh, that's not the answer that I was hoping for. And, you know, it does eventually land at a better place than that. But it's still like just one more twist of the knife, one more pulverizing, you know, kind of moment. So I like those two bits of it. But I also, have you watched this with an audience or you just watch it?
I don't think I've seen it with an audience.
I've seen it twice now. One of the reasons I wanted to do it on the show is because it was much hyped the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it and I kind of go, all right, Korean genre movie. My bar is already pretty high for that kind of thing. So you got to really kill it. And like the movie does great.
Mm-hmm.
But the way it was being talked about, I thought it was like the movie I fucking missed from that year. And so I wanted to see it again. And I saw it this time for the show, again by myself, again in my home. And I really feel like, you know, I see people adore this film. In a, not just in a this movie's great way, but in a very like this movie is very special to me way. And I just feel like I'm missing out on seeing it with an audience. And I don't know, like this might not be the sort of thing that I ever really tell you on the show, but just because the movie is about a fucking virus and just the time we're in, and I'm thinking about it a lot watching it, I also felt the very real impact of like, I need to see this in a fucking theater.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just so tired, man. I'm so tired of these movies at home by myself. I hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is one of those that, you know, I so want to know how people root for each individual passenger, what scenes they get excited about, what little things the movie milks that are like just working for people. And part of what gave me more joy out of this is imagining like, oh, how must this have played at a festival? Or like, oh, I bet this scene, like people were making noises and
mm-hmm.
and like not knowing what was going to happen. And so there's this weird meta layer that I enjoyed it on that was totally fucking not there. And I wish it could have been real instead of in my head. So how's that depressing note?
It was very sad. It's a very sad note.
Yeah. This has an animated prequel, we should mention, Soul Station. And actually, there is a sequel we're not supposed to mention because in America, it's secret and we don't get it here.
Right.
Everybody else gets it. We don't get it. So we are just subtweeting it by even covering Train to Busan on the show.
Yep.
At all. Look, if you're hoping for like a bright moment to leave on, you really got to catch me between a few words because all my sentences go down at the end. None of them, they just really don't get us out of here. What are we doing?
We have a website. That's, you know, not only do we have a website, but we have a website that you worked really hard to make nice for everyone.
I love the website.
That is doublefeature.fm. If you are already subscribing on patreon.com/doublefeature, sounds like you will have an alternate version of the feed sitting right at the top of, once again, doublefeature.fm.
Click members. Click members, do a login. It's right there.
Okay.
I promise you'll love it.
Are there maybe a group of, say, 4 to 5 people?
Yeah. Well, I especially want to thank Deshelle Shapiro and Donald Muzzy, who are showrunners and have been putting up with some of this nonsense for the longest fucking time while we figure out how to give the finger to giant corporate overlords and like completely program our own, you know, very specific solutions. So thanks to those guys, but also Tom Leonard, Abbott of Unreason, Ross Mahler, and Ciara for being executive producers of the show. There, how about that?
That was good. No, you did a really good job. See, you're doing fine. You're doing totally fine.
I'm fine.
If you didn't have any fun this week, I'm sorry. Next week, we'll have more fun. Next time on Double Feature, we're going to do...
we're going to cancel Michael Kester.
I'm canceled.
Next time on Double Feature, the canceling, the public canceling of Michael Kester. Yeah, gear up your tweets.
Dubious call, but we're going to do a couple exploitation flicks. One is called Hard Ticket to Hawaii. One is called The Human Tornado. And we're going to find out which one has better songs next week.
That's what we're doing.
That's the plan.
Yeah, we're just, we're all about music on Double Feature. You know, in fact, I didn't even watch the films. I only listened to them. So, No, they're not the most dubious movies, but they are exploitation films.
Extremely.
You know, what's funny is we haven't covered exploitation in a long time.
Yeah, no, a lot's changed since we last covered exploitation. Let's watch more fucking films.
So excited. All right, bye.
This program is a proud member of the battleship Pretension Fleet.